Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show here on Raglan Community Radio. And hello, Cedric in the Ukraine. How are you doing?
Good evening from Kiev. I'm pretty tired, but we're here and we're live.
Yeah, well, live is good. Now, we did want to talk to you yesterday and the day before. I was hoping to catch you, but just want to tell us what's been happening and why you couldn't make the call.
Okay, when I last went to reach out just a couple of nights ago there, what's been happening is Kiev has been constantly bombarded by Russian missiles and drone attacks constantly and consistently for the last well over a month now. And the time I ring use is usually the time they start kicking into gear and start launching missiles and bombers in the air and drones are on their way.
Yeah.
And it generally takes for the missiles and that to arrive here anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour and a half once they're launched from the 222 bombers, Russian bombers. Yeah, so it can take, depending what's being fired at us, some will get here quicker, others will get here a bit longer.
So you get some warning, and what do they tell you to do?
Well, we receive what they call air raid alerts, and they come to all phones inside Ukraine. And anyone like myself that holds a Kyivstar SIM card, which is majority of Ukraine, they get that. And if they don't, with a Kyivstar, then they will have their normal whatever, like Vodafone or something like that card in it.
Yeah.
The messages are pushed to them as well, so everybody is alerted a decent amount of time in advance. Before the missiles start falling and drones and whatnot and bombs, yeah. But the app that I use has been created here in Ukraine, and it's fairly accurate. I'd like to say it's about 100% accuracy when they detect these incoming missiles and bombs. You know, they can detect bombs coming, and they can also detect drones coming.
And so when you get that message, you go underground, basically. Is that the story?
That is the right actions from all citizens and visitors here in Ukraine. But now that this war's gone on almost 3 years, just for the city alone, we're heading towards 14,000 missiles, bombs, and drones being shot at this city alone. And if you could imagine people responding to them all night long, continuously back and forth from their hotels, motels, any accommodation anywhere in the city. Yeah, people have gotten used to it. And so no one really reacts these days to the missiles and all that coming in unless it's dropping around their ears pretty much.
Oh, okay, okay.
They used to, on a large scale, everyone used to go for the subways and any shelter that they had in their homes. Most buildings here around the place do have shelters in every single one of them in their basements. So much time has gone on and these things are that regular that people
adjust, I guess.
To not ignore it, but they will carry on with their day, night, or morning whenever the attacks occur.
And so you've been at the times we've
somewhere near the front line.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're definitely going for your shelter.
Yeah.
In the much closer regions, and we're not too far, but we're well enough away. But anything around Kharkiv, Kherson, Mykolaiv, Odessa, the Donetsk Oblast, the Donbass Oblast, all the frontline areas here, you're definitely going for your shelters.
Yeah, yeah. But you've been there the last couple of mornings, our time, so, and you can't use your cell phone down there, I guess, if you're underground.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah,
Where you are now, the things are, signals and that, yeah, most people just get no signals coming out from underground, especially when you go down train to one.
Yeah. So Cedric, can we...
On top of that, electronic warfare kicks in around major installations and high priority targets.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there is. And once the alarms go off, if you all of a sudden lose net, no matter underground or above, you know that the electronic warfare systems have kicked in to prevent these missiles from flying near targets.
Yeah.
Drones and anything else being fired at us.
So can we talk about the work you're doing over there at the moment in Ukraine and in Kiev?
Well, I've had to spread my wings a little bit further, and I can't remember if I mentioned I went into refugee evacuations.
I think that's new. No, you didn't talk about that last time we did an interview, so that is new to us.
Okay. Well, previous to my refugee evacuations, it was purely humanitarian aid delivery, but more medical.
Yeah.
Delivering swabs, gauzes, things needed at the front line, bandages, first aid treatment equipment, medical equipment, along with antibiotics and whatnot, tubing connectors to use for equipment such as drip bags, and I don't know my medical names and all that, but most of the most urgent stuff we would deliver right across the entire eastern front line.
Yep.
But now, as of the last probably 2-3 weeks now, we're doing refugee evacuations near the front lines. And most recently took out a Ukrainian family, a mother of 7, with the 2 oldest still here in Ukraine. They're young adults now and they're making their own decisions.
Yeah.
But the remainder of the kids, we got her, the mother and the kids, evacuated from a place called Vozhenesky, which is in between roughly Mykolaiv and Kherson City, down in the southeastern, southernmost eastern regions, closer towards Odessa way.
Yeah.
And we evacuated them from there and all the way across the Polish border through Medyka, and had them park up one night at Hope Shelter from the Hope Foundation, one of the big NGO groups here, and then managed to move them all the way through to Munich, Germany, where they have been there for the last couple of weeks now, and finally seen the look I've been waiting for a long time after sad looking faces, traumatized by being under constant shelling from Russians and watching it basically on their back doorstep. The big bright smiles was the biggest reward that I've received so far from their family, and it's just really touching to see them smiling now and being able to enjoy a little bit of life.
So were they living, Cedric, in a town that's pretty close to the front line?
Oh, absolutely. The mother would film the Russian choppers flying in and launching their rockets and watching bombs and missiles going off very near to them. So they were in eyesight of the incoming Russian helicopters to artillery fire and missile fire and drones.
It's pretty sobering. Pretty sobering.
Very.
Yeah.
Very scary. Very scary. And for those poor kids to have witnessed that for so long now, I'm just glad we've got them in a place of safety there in Germany.
Yeah.
Where they're settling in quite nicely. Yeah.
So there must be, a lot more people who need to evacuate. Like, is there like a program going at the moment? I presume you don't just roll up into the town and say, I've got a car, does anyone want to hop in?
Oh, absolutely not. Usually some will reach out and they'll look around through all the networks provided in Ukraine. But others will get the call from the government here, and it's time to leave. Majority will leave with trains and transportation put on them from the Ukrainian government. But the ones that find it hard to move to getting out of their house, like the elderly or the sick, it takes the majority of the NGO groups here to source them out one by one, family by family, and eventually organise to get them extracted out of the war zone. Yeah.
Mm. And so, is this like, how are you working? Are you volunteering? Like, how does all this kind of thing work for you?
So, I volunteer, total voluntary. We don't get paid, or I don't get paid. Certain NGO groups have the finances to do that for their volunteer workers, but that's few and far between.
Right.
Most actually do it off their own pockets and donations from around the world, from whoever they're connected with, and friends, family, whānau, community groups, so on and so forth. But majority are doing it off their own back. Yeah. And okay. As I say, some of the groups are have enough funding, again, through donations by many ways.
Right.
And many other organisations that provide those platforms, such as Give a Little, GoFundMe, and those types of services out there.
Yeah, but so you're volunteering. So what are your finances like then?
I'm struggling. I came over by myself. The money I had saved up, which was $4,000, not including the plane tickets, has all been used and absorbed well over 2 months ago. I've been surviving through a couple of friends back in New Zealand, one territorial soldier, and three other colleagues I used to work with. And a couple would donate me $60 weekly, where others would donate anywhere from 80 to 100, what they could manage. Yeah, so living off the donations here to pay for my meals, food, and accommodation. It's quite the struggle, and I have to work a very tight budget. And now that most of them have dropped away because they just can't afford it, you know, with their lifestyles,
yep,
and their circumstances, I'm basically down to one guy now who will send me anywhere from $50 to $100 every week, every Tuesday.
So you would
have to manage that.
Yeah, so you need some help at the moment. So you need some financial help to keep doing this evac work.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And basically, to look after me, to survive as I am on my own at the moment, it does require constant donations. As I say, I'm down to between $50 and $80 to $100 per week, which would equate to around about 3,000 Ukrainian dollars. And that is not much, considering that it cost me a week at the cheapest accommodation $800, or a little bit more when it goes into the weekends and the price goes up. About $1,000 hryvnia, Ukraine money a week, just to pay for the accommodation, the land, the meals. If I have to go to various locations, then I got to put in for fuel cost, so on and so forth. And that's about my whack. I can't even afford some of the most basic personal hygiene kit and all that, clothing and all that. I still use what I brought over with me. It's just too expensive to, very little to go with.
Yeah, okay. So if people want to help you out, how can they help out? Actually, let's talk about the Give a Little situation, because I did say to you, I emailed you and I was like, why can't you use a Give a Little? But that's also an interesting story too.
So with Give a Little, I did have it up and going when I first came over last year, and I only stayed briefly due to circumstances here on the ground at the time. And I had to end up closing the page down because it was drawing a bit too much of the wrong attention. So with these public platforms, we run the risk, every single volunteer runs the risk of being tracked down by the Russians in real time. And by that, the Russians are good enough at their job at surveillance. And should they see postings coming up, for example, on my Give a Little page, they will use every ounce of information on that page, including photos, pictures, and videos. And they soon... how would you say they soon have a way quickly of finding you just through those that bit of information that you share on Give a Little page. So due to operational security and to maintain my safety, it's best that we don't use those platforms. Otherwise, you do run the risk of being found. And when you are found, and many have been found through these platforms, there is a site on Telegram, which is a Russian-born company. They have a page on Facebook, of all pages, where they stick it up there, and it's called Track a Nazi Merc. So every volunteer that's supporting Ukraine will make it onto this page, and it really sticks a fire for the Russians, and they love hunting down foreigners. We are a number one target if they can find and locate us. And the reason being is they do receive a bonus reward, extra cash, if they can confirm that they've killed a foreigner, whether it be an aid worker or whether it be a volunteer soldier. It does not matter. They will put you on track and ask you once they find out who you are. They'll go through any page, any social network that you use and operate to find all these volunteers in Ukraine. And unfortunately, many have been picked up along the way, made them onto track of Nazi murk, and eventually been killed. So
I kind of run
a very high risk.
Yeah, I kind of understand why that would why they would be targeting foreign mercenaries. That, you know, in a war footing, that kind of makes sense. I'm not sure why the aid workers, or do they just assume that, are they making the assumption that an aid worker could be a fighter as well?
To understand the mind work of the Russians and why they do this to volunteers, I'll explain that currently right now, they are focusing and have an intense focus on destroying anything from kindergartens, churches, schools, universities, colleges, hospitals, children's hospitals. I live not too far from the children's hospital that was blown up in Kiev. I'm nearly 900 metres away from that site, and they still haven't fixed it completely. But
let's talk about where we're talking about. You're needing some funding support, and obviously give a little, definitely out of the question based on what you've just told us. So how can people help you out, Cedric, if they want to help out with the work you're doing?
Okay. So the best way, and the best way that a lot of volunteers do now, they will ask that you direct the money straight to their bank account, for two reasons. One, it's secure. Two, we ourselves, and when required to by either the Inland Revenue Department, like for me as a New Zealand volunteer, can track every single transaction back with a digital record of that. And it just means that your donors have a very direct link to you and be able to provide that evidence should it ever be requested. And we can do that very, very quickly by sending them statements or digital records as such in order to account for the money that is spent over here in Ukraine. Everything is paid through terminals. They function just like the Western world. Everything's digital. Cash is slowly... here still, but the machines really take everything on, and so having the donors put their kind donations to us directly into our bank account covers accountability and also allows us ourselves and them to be able to track through where their money's going exactly. So for example, I could travel around paying for food and fuel, accommodation. All of it will be rung up on the registers through the FPOS terminals and then straight back to my bank. And, yeah.
Okay.
Have an accurate account. Yeah.
So are we going to read your bank account number out, or should we put it on? We're going to write this up and put it on our website and on Facebook as well. So should we? Do you want to save the bank account number for then, or do you want to read it out now?
Oh, crikeys.
Like, we can just save it for the written form of the interview and put it on our... put it in the blurb for the podcast as well.
Yes, it will be ideal. Yeah. Sorry, I don't have it.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I didn't think that one through before we went on the air to make sure that was ready. But it's reading a number that big on the air is not very the chances for mistakes are pretty big. So I think we'll go for the online. Yeah, and I think you've sent some photos of some of the work you're doing. If you've got any recent updates. So people can see where they're sending their money to and what you're doing?
Yes, I've already sent out quite a bit already to, there's a spin-off media, a reporter by the name of Tush, has covered my story back in the city of Chernobyl, when I was back there about a month and a half ago. She has a whole boatload of photos and videos and whatnot that I've sent her of my work from the very start back in April this year. And I will continue to pump out photos and videos to the radio station. We just need to find an easier portal other than email.
Oh, okay.
I'm more than happy to send it through a WhatsApp or well, not Facebook, but you know, something like WhatsApp would be ideal. And then I most certainly can, and the public can keep a track on all my work done thus far and the work that lays ahead.
So, Cedric, when you just said the name of that journalist, your voice cut out or the technology cut out, so can you repeat that?
Okay, her name is, first name is Tash. She works for Spinoff.
Yeah.
She just released last night the stories on three other Kiwi operators here in country. I won't say what they do, but it's there now public in New Zealand through Spinoff Media. And she's been travelling throughout Ukraine. She came out of Europe and crossed over the border. And I was the first person she had interviewed to cover my story in regards to the humanitarian aid work side of things. And then she has gone off to visit other soldiers and also a padre that I work with. And we do a few things together. Padre Owen Pormana. He has been here for some time now in theatre with this war, and he himself conducts refugee evacuations, casualty evacuations, alongside his ministry work.
Okay.
Great guy, former Navyman, New Zealand Navy. We're constantly in touch with one another and how things are going, and just keeping an eye out for one another, and we'll even do welfare checks on each other when we hear these air alerts go off, because we're both in the same city. He's just not on the same side of the river as me.
Yeah. So, can you send me a link to some of her work on Spinoff? I was just trying to have a quick look.
Absolutely. Right?
Yeah,
that'll be
a good thing for us to have. We were talking about the money before. Like, have you got any suggestions for how much people might? I mean, people will, if they want to contribute, it will be their choice, but you've kind of got any suggestions about, like, what other people have been paying or something like that to help you out?
Yeah, so when I had four donors going all together, I had them spread it out over the week, so a couple early in, one in the middle of the week and one towards the end of the week two would pay $60 each, and that was a couple. A couple of local wardens we used to have there in Raglan, actually, Nancy and Reedy, with the Raglan Māori Wardens Charitable Trust. So they would send me each $60 a week, and it would come in Monday and Tuesday. Then I have my friend Eric, ex-territorial force soldier, based down in Invercargill. He would send me $100 a week. That has since reduced in the last 2 months. Between $50 and $80 a week. And I have one other guy, he's actually Ukrainian, goes by the name of Yuri, and he works there in the Waikato in Hamilton City there at the Tarapa end. He's with the Ukrainian Waikato Association, so he would send me $100 randomly.
Right, okay.
just when he could manage it.
When he could. But, okay, yeah. So that's an option too, to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And... So we'll write this up. So for people who genuinely want to help,
roughly around $280 was a pretty decent figure to make life that much more easier. But as I say, I'm down to $50 or $80 a week now, and it's an absolute struggle. Struggle.
Yeah, for sure. Now before we go, Cedric. There was one other thing I wanted, you mentioned that something about a counsellor to give advice for some people. I can't remember the background from that email, but can you just tell people what that was about?
So in talking with a few of my soldier friends, volunteers, a couple of Scotsmen that have been over here and served up the front lines here, there is so much PTSD impacting nearly every single soldier that goes out there to the front. And not only that, the civilian population here in Ukraine is suffering from severe mental health issues. In this country, it's a novelty. They don't have a system where they can support anyone with mental health. In my case, after talking with a couple of my soldier friends from Scotland, we decided to set up an online voluntary counselling service, because every soldier and every Ukrainian and every foreign volunteer here has a phone. And we need to start addressing these mental health issues, such as PTSD and just the sheer trauma of war for everybody in general. This service will be provided for all English-speaking volunteers. And it doesn't matter if you're German, American, Irish, Scottish, or even Colombian, Brazilians, South Americans. We are in the process of trying to find enough counsellors from around the world on a global scale to volunteer a few hours of their time, and we need to cover a 24-hour bracket for the remainder of the war. Once we do find the enough personnel that can volunteer just a couple of hours, so for example, New Zealand, if I had even just 6, 8, maybe 9 counsellors. They don't have to be currently counsellors. If they were former counsellors, if they are qualified, these are the people that we're looking for to volunteer a few hours a day, and we'll spread it around. For example, New Zealand, maybe 9 people spread out over a 24-hour period. We're only looking at a few hours a day per person. And once we get enough numbers on board, then we will launch this program, because I haven't seen it done anywhere else through any other conflict. And these soldiers and these volunteers really do need the support. And there's no online group that's doing it for free.
You want to see if you can make
it free to the to the volunteers in it. And this is something that we're currently in the middle of setting up. Once we have the numbers, a portal will be made accessible on a global scale, and then we can open the lines and begin to treat the trauma and the mental illnesses and the PTSD that's impacting just about everybody in this country.
Yeah, and Cedric, can I ask, just before we go, like the same question of you, like you've had no doubt some fairly frightening experiences. How are you dealing with it at the moment?
As a former soldier myself, I've learned to deal with things as they happen and occur. I really, using just the experiences that I've had in the past, work experiences back in New Zealand, and then my military experience behind that, has allowed me to deal with any issues that may arise. Currently, don't feel affected by the traumas and the things that I witnessed. I've merely only seen half of the horrors out there because I don't stay on the front lines on a daily basis. I'm there, do my tasking, deliver the aid, supplies, and then I'm gone again.
Yeah.
I do, however, witness the effects when I get back to the other towns and cities and to my accommodation. Every day, everywhere I go, the wounded soldiers, the injured, the many stories. I get talking to a lot of Ukrainians as if I was back, and my ears have heard so many tragic stories, and I see the injuries on these soldiers, I see these injuries on these volunteers, and I hear all these stories, and it's a tragedy. Absolute tragedy. But I'm doing fine, actually. Like I say, I don't stay out on the front lines with my kind of job.
Yeah.
Although I do see what's going on up the front there. It hasn't had an impact on me yet. It may do, but I have a pretty strong will, a pretty strong personality, and as long as I see a few smiles a day and help a few people laugh a little, it seems to help me a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Sense of hope, I guess.
And if I can just add, if I could just go quickly back to the Trakanati Murt, the mentality of why these schools and churches and hospitals and everything that's not a military target is struck on a daily basis here by the Russians. They do not aim for military targets. They'll go for power stations at best. As you can see, they opened up the power station along the Dnieper River there, which flooded out down towards the city of Kherson and every other town and village along that way. The mindset of the Russians is life doesn't matter. I know it sounds hard to believe, but when you have a leader like Putin, he does not care how many soldiers he loses. Every day, there's over 1,000. It's around about 1,130-odd Russian soldiers are killed every single day. And for the last 3 months, that figure has been climbing. We're currently sitting around 600,000-plus wounded and killed Russian soldiers, as opposed to the Ukrainian side, maybe around 150,000. So their leader has no care for life, and they literally jump for joy if they're able to kill children, women, civilians.
Is that what's in the news in the Ukraine? Is that what they're saying?
That's what I see. And yes, it is in the news here in Ukraine. Just last night, a hotel Zenit was struck, a college was struck in the city of Lviv, killing all but one in this hotel, in this family of four. So the father was the only one that survived, because at the time that occurred, he happened to duck out of his hotel or his apartment to go and get some water, and that's what he returned to. His entire apartment block just leveled by a Kinzhal missile. And as I say, this is an everyday thing in Ukraine. I've seen parks, kindergartens, all the civilian infrastructure is what's getting hit by these missiles that get fired into Ukraine every single day. And more so in the last few months. They do, and I honestly say, they do not go for military targets. They will strike anything else but a military target with those missiles and drones. It's even that bad now that because of the increase of support from other countries supporting Russia, they now have enough drones that they are simply sending drones into cities like Kherson, because the Russian positions are just over the riverside from there, and they are specifically targeting every civilian that they can find in the streets, at bus stops, at dairies, in lines, at queues, at refugee centres, shelters. They are flying, they have that many drones in the air now that they are directly targeting civilians and going out of their way, I will add, with their missiles and bombs and drones. It is absolutely tragic in what's occurring in these last few months, and it seems to be on the increase.
So, Cedric,
now that could be,
It's sorry, we need to wrap up because we've got to move on. I feel rude doing that, but can we just remind people the main reason for the conversation, for you to continue doing aid work and evacuation work to get families away from the front line, which seems to be what you're telling us you're doing. You do need some financial support.
Yes.
Yeah, and we will, just for listeners who've just tuned in, we will get the details written up, put on our news portion of our website and on the social media, so if anyone wants to help Cedric out, they can. Yeah.
So, yes, my whānau friends and for all those who know me, please share it around. in order to keep me here in Ukraine doing what I do by supplying medical supplies, by continuing to do refugee evacuations and many other things, I really, really do need your help. And it will definitely keep me here going and doing the good work here and on behalf of New Zealand and our people, our country. And it will go a long way in the books of Ukraine, to say the least.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I absolutely need some help.
Yeah, okay, man. Well, look, we'll leave you now. Hopefully you get some peaceful sleep tonight if the rockets will let you. And wish you all the best over there.
I will say one more thing. Only just 3 days ago in the biggest strike on Ukraine, on Kiev city, first time I've seen a Kinzhal missile go over my head.
Right.
Literally over the top of my accommodation here through the middle of the city heading towards the Children's Hospital again when it was struck a month and a bit ago. It's the first time I've experienced one of those Russian missiles going directly over my head. The sound, the look of it, everything. It flies low altitude as it nears the target.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty scary. Yeah, I bet. Yeah, yeah. All right, man. Well, I hope you have a peaceful night. Yeah.
Will do. Thanks, Aaron.
Okay, see you, Cedric. All right, folks, that was Cedric Waitiri in Ukraine. And I know some of the stuff he was saying there about the schools and Putin and things like that. I know some of our listeners are not going to be very comfortable with that. What I will say is that's the news within the Ukraine. That's what people have been told, and that's what Cedric is repeating to us. I know there are many different news sites with many different angles, and I'm not going to get into that at the moment. This is what I'm trying to do is a story just about someone from Raglan who's doing something interesting overseas. And he does, certainly sounds like he needs some help. So we will, yeah, we'll get our stuff together and get some info out for people who do want to help. But in the meantime, that's the end of the show for the day. I did want to remind people, don't forget about different topic altogether, Dr. Oliver McLeod's book launch about the geological survey map of Karioi. Don't forget about Whangaroa Talent Factory. Age 13 to 18-year-old musicians can sign up for that. We've got another few days of that one open. And today, I was trying to encourage this earlier with Dennis Amor in the studio. Go to the council website. It's your chance. People who say, oh, the council's already decided before we do the consultation. Well, this is a consultation they're doing. It's called Places and Spaces. They haven't written up any of this stuff yet. It is your chance to have your say before they get going. So, go to the council website, look for Places and Spaces, or go to Whangaroa Environmental Defence Facebook page. They've got a link there as well. So, yeah, those are some things. Time for me to go. I'll be back again on Monday morning.